And Richard Reynolds joins me now. Richard, you described there your beginnings as a guerrilla gardener, entirely spontaneous, ashamed of walking past those beds. When you come to write the book, you associate this this movement with the diggers, with many other historical movements and thoughts, including Mao Zedong. Was that post hoc rationalisation?
Absolutely. What happened was that I was really proud of what I'd achieved that evening, and I photographed it, and I began blogging it. And this is what happens. People email you, they come across your blog, they start telling you what they're doing, telling you about things that might inspire you, and it grew from there. And I'd never heard of the diggers when I began guerrilla gardening at all, but I read about their work, dug out their own pamphlets from the Bodleian Library, and realised there's a continuity here
of the idea that the land belongs to those who cultivate it.
Well, I wouldn't say it belongs to us, but there they were with neglected wilderness, common land. They were allowed to walk across it, but they weren't allowed to grow on it. And yet they had a need, and to them it seemed like the just thing to do. And that is the same for me, but at a different scale.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a high moral case, but the guerrilla gardening is nevertheless a pretty broad church, and with all sorts of people in it, and some people, like you, are planting bulbs on roundabouts. Seems entirely benign activity. There was, though, that demonstration which resulted in a Mohican strip of turf on the head of Winston Churchill. There was the 1996 Reclaim the Streets, digging up of a motorway, planting a tree. Do you make any distinction? What are the boundaries, do you think, of as it were, legitimate, illegitimate activity?
Well, for me, the definition is about, is it really guerrilla activity, and is it really gardening? By which I mean, are they actually cultivating something? Or is the plant being used in a symbolic manner? Because plants come with a lot of positive associations, particularly in these days of increasing the environmental awareness. So the two examples you mentioned there, I don't really welcome into the broad guerrilla gardening church. Most guerrilla gardeners I meet don't identify with that, because there was no hope of any of that planting surviving more than a few hours. But it was being used to make a gesture, a point about other issues, in that instance about the occupation of roads by cars.
What about the other phenomenon you talk about, which is harvesting of other people's crops? I'm sure that, you know, many people have nicked the odd apple off a tree, but still, it is a question of boundaries, isn't it? I mean, that is theft.
Yeah, that would be theft. Though the harvesting of other people's fruit that I write about and commend as a form of, well, it's guerrilla harvesting. It's not guerrilla gardening. Are those trees growing in public, or trees growing on private land but hanging over into the streets? Frequently, people are probably familiar with the rotten apples and plums and cherries over the street. There are groups both in Sheffield and in Los Angeles that are going around in a very organised manner, mapping these locations and harvesting them, which I think is brilliant, and again seems the right thing to do if it's neglected.
What gives you the right to plant that flower bed rather than anyone else? Suppose another neighbour in the tower block had wanted a different scheme and had dug up your lavender and put in marigolds, or decided he wanted to grow vegetables, or, you know, when you breach the nominal ownership, do you not open up all sorts of dispute potential?
Definitely. There was a right near where I live, a tub. I'd had a go guerrilla gardening it. I'd failed on two counts because it was repeatedly being vandalised. So I retreated and planted something much more modest. A neighbour put a tree there and dug up all my plants. And to me, if you approach it by saying this is neglected land, and that's the starting point, and you do something with it, then, like the going into the Wild West, this is, it's open territory. It's a degree of first come, first served. And if you don't keep up the maintenance, if you aren't holding onto your ground, then fair game. If somebody's got a more, who's going to put more effort in, then they can have it. And in this instance, I worked out who this neighbour was. We now work together. He helps me out from time to time doing the pruning, and his enthusiasm has been channeled.
But you get, I mean, all right, you get through that situation, but you are entering a territory where there really aren't any rules. It could be trowels at dawn, surely.
In some ways, the measure of the success of guerrilla gardening would be turf warfare between local residents wanting to use the land around them intensively and having to try and find a way of working out and organising that. But to me, that would be a success. That really would be, because you would organise it. And this wouldn't be a case of then attacking neglected land. It would be a way of organising the cultivation of land that people had great demand of. Now, of course, guerrilla gardening doesn't just attack neglected land. There are guerrilla gardeners out there who are digging up immaculate lawns and putting things in them. And I have some sympathy with that, but it's not what I do or particularly encourage.
But one could see it becoming an element of class warfare. I mean, I could decide that the need for vegetables of you know, my neighbourhood could be satisfied by planting carrots in Kensington Gardens.
Yes, yes. And give it a go. You might be able to do that. The Kensington Gardening horticultural contractors may not notice those carrots, and you may not be disrupting the display for anyone.
But what would you think about that?
Well, I would think better target some neglected land rather than some immaculate land that's already found another productive purpose. Because if you're attacking neglected land, the opportunity for dispute is far reduced. And, you know, it makes more sense. But, of course, the issue is land is a finite resource. If there's huge demand to make use of that land, then the debate is not going to be about who's looking after it. It's going to be about, well, what should we be actively doing with it? And my target is neglect. But side by side, it's the issue of scarcity.
Now, those beds that you showed me are now, as it were, your position vis-a-vis those beds is now legitimate. After a confrontation with the council, you've been given the right to cultivate those beds.
Yes.
Is that, in a way, the objective? Is it to legitimise guerrilla gardening? Or do you feel this is perhaps a little too tame and you'd really rather move on?
No, I was thrilled to get legitimisation there, but importantly for me, it was on my terms. And for a lot of guerrilla gardeners, the strategy is go out there, do it, show the potential in the landscape, also prove your commitment to it. There are plenty of dreamers out there who have visions for their landscape and local community but can't actually get it together. Go out there, do it. Now, if somebody wants to say, that's fine, carry on, that's fine by me. You're not a guerrilla gardener anymore, but you've won the war and you've hopefully won it on your terms. And in this particular instance, the area outside my block, had I asked permission before putting a trowel into the ground, I would not have been granted it. And that is what the council have told me.
Richard Reynolds, Guerrilla Gardening, is published by Bloomsbury.